turned out to be a punk rocker. You know what I do?
Warning. This podcast contains hot takes, cliched opinions, and strong language. Welcome to Records and Bands.
So, bit of a warm-up. I've got a list of the 10 greatest classic rock bass players according to Radio X. So I'll give you 5 guesses and we'll see how many you can get.
Billy Sheehan?
No, not on the list.
Honest?
Honest.
Rock bass players.
That's one guess.
I'm going to go with... Is it Entwistle?
John Entwistle, is it number 5?
Get in there. John Entwistle, number 5. Classic rock bassists. I'm going to go Steve Harris, because he's my boy.
It's Radio X, he's not going to be on there.
Yeah, he's not going to be. I knew he wouldn't be. He's a Butler?
Nope.
Lemmy?
Lemmy is on the list at number 7.
Who's that lady from Talking Heads?
Tina Weymouth is on the list.
Tina Weymouth, that's her, go. Yeah. Who else can I think of? Running dry now.
Okay, so the top 10 classic rock bass players, according to Radio X. 10, Paul McCartney.
Oh, of course, yeah.
Then you've got Nikki Sixx from Motley Crue, Geddy Lee, Lemmy, Tina Weymouth, John Entwistle, John Paul Jones.
Oh, yeah, fair enough.
Paul Simonon from The Clash, Bill Wyman from the Rolling Stones, and from Queen, John Deacon.
Yeah. Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
There's no sort of unexpected ones apart from Nikki Sixx. That's a very interesting one.
Welcome to the show. I'm Rob. Leon is joining me this week. You're all right up there?
Yes, all good.
You posted on Facebook the other day about wanting a banjo. So I'm wondering, is my newfound love of country music, is that infectious? Or have you got a bluegrass project on the go?
I have got songs that were put into the band that I never thought I'd ever do. Front runner are looking for new stuff and something that catches people's imagination. So we're looking into
having a hoedown.
Yeah, sort of. We're covering a song by Noah Kahan, which is very popular at the moment.
That's the one that Olivia Rodrigo covered, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is a really good track. Yeah. So I'm thinking there's in the original version, there's not much going on. Other than like acoustic guitar and vocals. So I thought, do I need to play bass or can I let the piano take some lower notes and maybe do some banjo? So, which then leads us into doing the new one by Beyonce.
Excellent. That'd be good.
So I thought, yeah, okay, I'll do the same thing there. We'll let the piano take the bottom notes and I'll do a bit of banjo over the top if I can get a banjo at the right price.
And work it out.
Yeah. So a lot of it,
I think you'll be all right. It's all fairly straightforward. Last week, I reposted our Moron Police episode from a couple of years ago because I was having a trawl through Instagram and I saw that before Christmas they had posted that they were back in the studio.
Yes, they've actually been in the studio for some time. They were in the studio with their sadly passed away drummer. Recording the follow-up to A Boat on the Sea. And sadly, he passed away. So that Thor passed away. So sadly, that put a bit of time onto the recording process. But they've got a drummer. And they've been, I've been following their posts on Instagram. And it's, they've been at it for like 12 months, 18 months. So, yeah, really intrigued about what they're going to produce next. Some of the songs off the EP, Stranger in the High Tide.
Yeah.
Some of those are quite interesting. There's certainly a bit of a deviation from A Boat on the Sea and songs that are on there. But yeah, it's going to be interesting. I'm really looking forward to it. And the sooner it comes out, the better.
Yeah. I've been shouting about it a little bit. The more I listen to it, the more I like it. Do you remember I said to you when I first listened to it, like, I wasn't sure if it was... if I liked it or not. It was clearly good, but I wasn't sure if I love it. I think it's brilliant. Full Circle, a record that you recommended, my youngest is listening to on the school bus.
Oh.
So there you go. How about that?
Oh, influencing the Joneses
circle the narrative or something, I think it's called.
Whoa.
Right, it's been a while since we've had a catch up, so it'll be good to get into some of the stuff we've been listening to lately.
Okay, buddy. I was just trying to cheer us up, so go ahead. Put on some old sad bastard music, see if I care.
I've had quite a busy week. I've listened to loads of stuff. Some is specifically for next week with Sam, but I've had a bit of a range of things on. The biggest one I was looking forward to the most was Norfa from Shane Smith and the Saints, who are officially one of my new favourite bands.
Mm-hmm.
This new record feels a bit bigger and a bit more ambitious. Like the three previous records would be right at home in a club or a smaller venue, and this one feels like it's ready for some bigger shows. Do you know what I mean? That sort of,
yeah,
you can just hear that they're aiming a bit bigger, maybe.
Yeah.
Hopefully it'll work out for them. It's only been out a week or so, and it's not grabbed me like the previous records, like Geronimo or Hail Mary did. But it's a really good album, and it adds a bit of depth to their catalogue. Like, you could always rely on them for a good old stomp along, but now there's this gives it a little bit more, if that makes sense.
Yeah, okay. I know they've sort of had a few sort of high profile TV plays and movie plays, haven't they? So that's always good for a career, isn't it?
Yeah.
I got a really good vibe from it, actually, when you said listen to it. So I did have a listen and kind of got Screaming Trees.
Oh, right, yeah.
From it, and I also got a bit of Johnny Cash.
Yeah, there's that one track he's saying it's really like, yeah, Johnny Cash, doesn't he? I wondered if they had found an old recording and they'd done something with it, but no, it is Shane Smith.
Yeah, it's very, very good, I thought. Just the comparisons between artists, I think it's drawing the right influences from the right people. So, yeah, good.
Cool. The other one that I listened to, there's a couple of others, but the other one I listened to a bit and was very impressed by was a soundtrack to that new Hunger Games prequel. Is it Ballad of Songbirds and Snakes?
Oh, yeah.
So we watched that on the weekend. We watched Barbie on Saturday, and then we watched Songbirds and Snakes the following day. My boy's Matchbox 20 taking Strays on Barbie.
Right.
Have you seen Barbie yet or not?
No. Oh, no, right, I haven't.
Okay. No. Anyway, yeah, so my boys were... shots fired in their direction, definitely. And I was like, ooh. but yeah, Songbirds and Snakes, film was all right. Was what it was like. But the music was really impressive, really awesome. The soundtrack album's got Flatland Cavalry, Olivia Rodrigo, Charles Wesley Godwin, who's another one of my new favourites. But the star is Rachel Zegler, who's like, she's the female lead in the film.
Yeah.
And her voice is just amazing. And it's a bit, it's more rootsy country stuff, which is where I am at the minute. Do you reckon there's an age you get to where you just start liking banjos and fiddles and pedal steel guitars? And is it like 44, 45?
I was talking about this before because there's where I am not really prepared to start listening to slower music yet. So it's still very much high pace, balls to the wall type rock and metal. Having said that, my pick of the week is going to be a bit of a shock, but I do think there is a point where you, like post-gig, I will listen to Classic FM.
Okay.
Because I think it's just a perfect come down from what we do, high energy, you know, party music.
Time, yeah,
so drive home, put a bit of thing on, and Dad comes with me to every gig now, so we both sit in the car, listen to Classic FM.
Excellent. Favourite classical piece then, or?
I think probably down to, is it Beethoven's fifth from used in the film Clockwork Orange?
Okay, I've no idea.
Yeah,
Isaac can play some Beethoven. Isaac, what Beethoven do you play on the? Isaac plays Ode to Joy on the piano.
Oh, okay, yeah, fair enough. Yeah,
oh, and he can also, he's just telling me he can also play the Super Mario Brothers theme.
Nice. That's the way to start.
last one for me. I don't know how it came up, but I was talking with the lovely Mark Plant from 100 Things We Learned from Film. And he was talking about having a Phil Collins tape back in the days. So I went back and I had to listen to No Jacket Required.
Oh, yeah. Classic.
And it officially bangs.
It does. It really
does. It's a really good record.
It was always on my brother's player at one point.
Stephens.
Gene,
all right, okay.
Gene, yeah, massive fan of Phil Collins, and I've heard it a million times. Really, really good.
Yeah. Baldy Phil is great, and that's a hill that I will die on. Move on to your stuff. So this time last year, Blaze Bailey, former Wolf's Bane and Iron Maiden singer, had a massive heart attack and needed like triple bypass surgery, and obviously had to then cancel his tour. But he seems to have used that time to write and record a new album, and that's one of the records you wanted to talk about, yeah?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, he's the forgotten man of metal, as I think a recent publication called him, which is... It's a real shame because he produces an astonishing amount of music, you know, really always in the studio, always recording something, always really working for the fans more than anything. You know, the releases aren't any type of bravado or ego trip. They are literally, I know there's people out there who want to listen to my music, so I'm going to record it. Anyway, it's a bit like this podcast. People do want to listen to what we're putting out. So we just continue to do it.
Both of them.
Yeah. So I think for Blaze, the heart attack couldn't have come at a much worse time, really, because he'd lost his wife, as kind of got either engaged or remarried. And just things are starting to really look up. He's got a really great band. And I loathe to call them a backing band because that's not what they are. Absolver have stepped in and do all of Blaze's recordings. And I think what that's given Blaze as a whole is a firm footing to move forward with. He's always had sort of like drafting players and people who were, you know, looking for something to do. And I think there's always been a feeling of this one's slightly different to what it was before because it's a different band, it's a different group. So I think in this respect, Blaze has recorded two albums of material, War Within Me being the last one, and then Circle of Stone being the one I've been listening to this week. And I do think it's really starting to show that they're gelling as a unit. And I just think it's a real showcase for Blaze as an artist, because it's got everything from screamy romp-alongs to some really nice, some of his soft tone vocal has got real depth, more than I think he had when he was with Maiden. It's really sort of controlled and quite moving in the style of like David Draiman, you know, really low end bottom notes that really move you. And I think generally the album is there's not anything I would say is a bad song. I know you've got some hang-ups about some of the lyrics and being a little bit...
I don't really want to get into my negative thoughts, really, to be honest, but positively, is it the last track on the album? It's a bit of a ballad, and that's something that I don't think I've really heard him do much of before. So that was like, oh, I wasn't expecting that. Do you know what I mean? Because normally he is just like, it's... I'm not familiar with 100% of his solo output, obviously, but... you know, I was just surprised that there was a ballad on there and that's what he was doing. So,
Oh, that's interesting, because he does an entire album back in 2018 with a really prolific classical guitarist called Thomas Zvesen.
Okay.
I think that's how you say his name. And it's some, it's basically just songs Blaze singing over the top of classical guitar, which is a really intriguing take on Blaze Bailey. But yeah, as far as Circle of Stone goes, there's a guest vocalist, female. There's nothing in the... I haven't dug too much into who she is, but
I think that's the track I'm on about.
It definitely is, yeah, because she sings throughout a couple of other tracks in there as well, where she just does backing vocals. And it adds a really nice texture because Blaze's voice is so warm and round, whereas the female vocal cuts through at higher timbre than what Blaze is kicking out, which I think a lot of people do kind of comment on how some of the guitars are a bit sort of crackly and a bit thin.
Well, that was going to be my notes. The notes I've got was that for me, it felt like the production was a bit thin, and it kind of felt like he was singing over a backing track at times.
Yeah,
but I don't mean like the band have recorded the song and then Blaze comes in and do the vocals. It felt like a, I'm trying to not be too harsh, but it felt like one of those CDs you buy where it's like 18 heavy metal tracks and it's like instrumental versions of songs you've heard, but not by the band that have done them. And you need to get them off the market and stuff like that. It just felt a bit like that, but.
Okay. Yeah, I suppose when you are using, I mean, Absolver have got albums of their own.
Mm.
So I suppose when you've got two separate artists coming together to produce that, to produce an album, I think you are going to get that slight disconnect. But I think there's less of that on this album than maybe there was on some of the past ones, where it just sort of didn't feel like it gelled in a lot of places. But I think also the tonality of the backing is possibly a conscious thing.
Yeah, okay.
A conscious decision by the band, purely because Blaze's, and it's not fair to say range, because I think Blaze has got a good range. I think actually his timbre of his vocals, if you put like really boomy double kicks and like woolly bass sound, it's all going to be a bit mid-rangey and a bit muddy. So by producing these sort of attacking high attack riffs, I think it separates out those two different zones. So you've got the higher end cutting when Blaze is really driving with his lower end vocals. And I think it works. It works really well. And I think it is a conscious choice to produce that type of tone.
I think that what you were just saying, like maybe there's a disconnect, but like for me, it feels like the lyrics are disconnected from the vocal performance is disconnected from the music. And also because it's not stuff that I listen to at all anymore, like, and I haven't done for years, like I don't get that connection with it.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, that's very likely, yes. And that's possibly the reason why I'm not connecting to the Last Maiden album as much.
Right, okay.
It's because it's not really what I'm listening to. I think it's kind of gone a bit too soft for my liking, for my taste, for where I am. But Blaze is still banging out the bangers. And, you know, I'm really happy to sit and listen to a Blaze Bailey album on the premise that he is producing music for the fans who want to turn up, sweat like a bastard and leave with not an ounce of energy left. And I think that's what Blaze is doing.
I was pleased to see a new Blaze Bailey album because this time last year he might have died.
Totally,
and
yeah.
Obviously he has that special place in my heart because like the first time we went and the only time I've seen Maiden, the first time we went together, Blaze Bailey was singing. So the only time I've seen Iron Maiden was with Blaze Bailey singing. So I'm always going to give him a chance. I might not listen to him all the time, but I'm always going to keep an eye on what he's up to.
Yeah. So I think when you listen to it, there's some absolute beauts in there from Blaze. Rage is one of my favorites off the album. Really, really catchy chorus, and that's where it starts off with Blaze's warmth in his vocal, very sort of low down, and then it just erupts into the verse. Really, really good. And I think also Call of the Ancestors is good. The title track Circle of Stone is really good, and as you say, the Until We Meet Again at the end with the female vocal is a really good showcase for just how far Blaze has come as a vocalist. I think it's really, really, you know, but that's just a whistle stop through the album, really. It's listenable throughout, you know. So yeah, that's that.
Excellent. The other big record that came out recently that's in your wheelhouse, The Mandrake Project by Bruce Dickinson.
Yep. Really excited to get hold of some new Bruce solo material. So I got the double vinyl. a digipack CD, and the comic book as well, CD version. So they've gone into my lockbox. I've read the comic and they'll go in there and never be used, never be seen again. It's always really nice to have something and open it and smell the ink. And
right, back to this record. How is it?
Disappointing.
Oh, right, okay.
I'm really disappointed. I don't know what it is. I think it's... I don't like to use it, but I think it all comes down to honesty. I'm listening to the Blaze album and it's just honest. It's an honest... It is what it is. It's a metal album designed to be played to feverish, feral metal fans in a small room, sweating, shouting, getting drunk. Bruce's album, I don't know. Melodically, it's kind of all over the place. I don't feel... it's almost like Bruce is singing over the top of something and hitting kind of all the right notes. And all of a sudden it just goes off on a complete tangent vocally over the top of something. And you just kind of think, oh, that's a really odd harmonic choice over the top of this part. And it just doesn't sit. It just doesn't sit. I've struggled to find a song that I really thought was brilliant.
Mm.
And I don't know whether it's because I'm still not ready to listen to that type of music or not. I just didn't think it had anything that caught, even like Afterglow of Ragnarok, which is like the lead single off the album. I just kind of thought it was a bit pretentious. I don't know. That's really bad. I'm a massive...
Yeah, I know, yeah.
Decades Iron Maiden fan, but I just didn't identify with it. I didn't connect with it at all.
So on the interview, you're saying about how it was 10 years in the making. He started writing in 2014, and then obviously he got poorly, didn't he? He had throat cancer,
yeah.
And then like when he got better, it was like, well, we best make a Maiden album, and then COVID, and now, so 10 years on, he's finally managed to make this album. For me, I thought it was a better album than the Blaze Bailey album. I know we're comparing apples and oranges, but the production is much fuller. You could tell a lot more money and time has gone into it.
Yeah, and also I think, again, with Bruce's range, if everything's up in the mid-range, it's going to sound like it's going to be a hard listen. So, you know, some of the guitars from Roy Z are very sort of chuggy, low choppy. And I think, again, it's a contrast between Bruce and the backing.
Yeah, so is he trying to, it's like the backing feels like it's trying to be a more modern metal album, but their idea of modern metal, and again, not being an expert at all, but the idea of modern metal that they have is about 1998.
Yeah.
And it still kind of feels Maiden wheelhousey. Maybe that's because Bruce is so distinctive. But
yeah,
if he moved away from that style for a record, for a solo record, maybe I'd be a bit more interested. Like, what does a Bruce Dickinson blues record sound like?
Yeah,
maybe just stretch himself a bit, stretch your legs a bit. Is exactly what I expected, to be honest.
Yeah. It's considering I'm a massive fan of The Chemical Wedding, which is one of his previous. This is not a patch on Chemical Wedding, nowhere near. And okay, give the guy his due, he's had throat cancer, but I think his range, he can still hit the notes, but does it sound as good as it once did? I don't think it does. I don't think those high notes are as clean or as resonant, shall we say. They sound very pushed.
There's a point where for me, Bruce Dickinson has gone from being a theatrical singer, and now his singing sounds a little more like amateur dramatic, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and that's a really good analogy actually, because that's what I'm trying to sort of it's what I'm trying to get at is that before it really did, his voice lent to the atmosphere of songs, whereas now it's almost like I watched a Justin Hawkins episode recently where he was reviewing one of the latest Judas Priest songs with Rob Halford, and he sat there saying, "Any minute now is going to be the scream. Any minute now is going to be the scream." And at the end of it, he said, "Oh, well, it's finished. He hasn't done the scream." And it's almost like that expectation is there for Bruce to be singing up in the, high C's or whatever, and don't. And I think that's what I felt with the comparison between the Blaze album and the Bruce album is Blaze never at any point do you expect Blaze to do falsetto. You know it's going to be balls to the wall drive. There's some points in there where he does some pretty high backing vocals, and I've sung along with some of the tracks at work in my head and thought, actually, that backing vocal's up there. It really is up there. And I think Blaze's got that ability to do those notes, but he chooses where his strengths are, which is in the middle. And I think, as you say, it'd be really nice for Bruce to do something maybe a little bit less up there and just kind of go, okay, well, we're going to do, I don't know, something in the range of Gary Moore and do some really interesting guitar work rather than trying to make a metal album where I'm singing very, very high again.
If you press play in the first track, I don't know, a banjo kicks in and then there's a harmonica or something, you just think, hang on, this is a bit different. And then all your expectations for what a Bruce Dickinson record is, he's not then fighting with those expectations. He might not sell quite so many records, but it might be a better record for it. I don't know. His
I
voice
think
is really
that's.
good still, remarkable for like six, he's the same age as my dad, and like the punishment he's put his voice through, and like you say, having throat cancer like 10 years ago, and a
I
very long
mean,
career, he's
there's no doubt the guy can still sing. There's no doubt about it. And he's reaching notes that, I can reach for about 45 seconds and then my voice cracks. It's really, really high. I just think that for me, which is still my favorite Bruce solo album, being Skunk Works, that is Bruce at Bruce peak. I think that was such a good album, a real divergence from all of his usual stuff.
It was different, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah,
And
so.
I think it was energetic. It was really beautifully paced. There were some slow songs. There was that he really had showed great control. Dream State is an amazing track, but we're going off tangent. We're talking about Afterglow of Ragnarok, but Mandrake Project. But I think Bruce has done better than this, and I think it's quite a way off his best solo album. Quite a way off.
Was there anything else you've been listening to lately?
Yeah, I have been
Oh yeah.
listening to I have done a deep dive on Genesis.
All right, cool.
Yeah, following on from your
Peter
Phil
Gabriel
Collins
Genesis or
revelation.
Phil Collins Genesis?
All of it,
All of
right
it.
from
All
the
right.
beginning right to the end.
Excellent.
So had a great time with that. Really good. Right back to like Supper's Ready and all that type of thing, right up to I Can't Dance.
Did
Had a
you go into
great
the
time.
stuff with the guy from Stiltskin?
Yes,
Yeah.
I wasn't too blown away by it, but
Right.
I think there was some good tracks.
Yeah.
I don't think you can knock him for what he's produced. It's a decent album, but I do believe, again, I think it might be that they suffered the key issue. I think they've been writing songs in a certain key, and I think if they'd written up a
Yeah.
tone, his voice would have reached that point where it
Yeah.
really opens up, and I think it
Stick
would
a
have
capo
been
on it.
exactly, and it
Yeah.
would have given the guy more headroom to really push his voice. It's a bit of a mid-rangey album.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's good. It's listenable.
Cool.
Definitely. So yeah, Genesis I've done a deep dive on Go West.
Go West?
Man, yeah. Yeah, really good.
Okay.
So
are you doing one of their songs in the band or something then? Or?
No. Oddly enough, the guitarist's brother-in-law, give him a name, Jack. His name's Tim Smith. He's always messaging me with things to listen to and things to check out. Sometimes it might be a covers band on YouTube. Other times it might be an artist like Toto or who's the other one he listens to? Oh, Doobie Brothers or something like that. Okay. Stuff that I need to get into and listen to because he believes they've got something to offer. Normally he's bang on. There's normally stuff to offer. And to be fair, Go West, I think it was their debut album.
Is it King of Wishful Thinking, their big one?
They've had so many, and you sort of sit there and think, "Oh, King of Wishful Thinking." But yeah,
I was just trying to place them because as soon as you say "Go West," I think of "Go West, Life is Peaceful." There, Go West, and I was like, no, it was King of Wishful Thinking was a big one, wasn't it?
Yeah, so the album that I really sort of identified with and knew a lot of, Bangs and Crashes from 1985. We close our eyes, yeah, we never lose again. So that's really cool. SOS is an amazing track on that. What other ones? As you quite rightly say, is it Call Me?
Could be, yeah. I'm not 100% familiar, to be honest.
And listening to the album, you think, oh, I know this one. I know this one. Yeah. Oh, this one's familiar. I know this one. But he said to me, give it a listen because the bass work is phenomenal. And he's absolutely right. It's fucking brilliant.
Excellent.
And that 1985, Bangs and Crashes, Bangs and Crashes.
Excellent. Brilliant.
It's really good. So, and I did listen to some of their other output, but some of it gets into jazz territory. And a bit overindulgent.
Okay.
But it's worth a listen.
Excellent.
You know, I really did give that a good go.
I'm going to listen to that Bangs and Crashes next week, I reckon. I'll report back.
That's an old song. This is a new song. It's Evolution, baby.
Right. Upcoming albums. So there's not a lot about this week in terms of, like, eye-catching new releases. We've got new records coming out from the Black Crowes. Scott Stapp from Creed.
Okay.
And Justin Timberlake. They've all got records out on Friday.
Excellent.
A couple that I will definitely listen to, though, are... I'm not going near those. a couple I'll definitely listen to. One from Kacey Musgraves, who brings us Deeper Well. Her last album was Golden Hour in 2018, and that won her Album of the Year at the Grammys. The two singles that have been put out before the album, they're really, really good. So I'll give it a spin off the back of those. It's country and western, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And the other record this week that grabbed my eyes was ears, whatever. Mad Caddies. Do you know Mad Caddies?
No.
2000s, ska-ish punk.
Skate
punk site, basically. They're bringing out Arrow's Room 117, and it's what you'd expect from Mad Caddies. They've always been a fun band that maybe should have been a little bit bigger.
Okay.
But I'll definitely give it a listen. I'm sure it won't hang around. It'll end up being like 16 songs in half an hour or something.
Yeah. Okay. So, worth a listen then.
Yeah. So yeah, fun. Not a lot about in terms of records coming up in the next couple of weeks or the next week.
Now, the making of a good compilation tape is a very subtle art. Many do's and don'ts.
So, we've been chatting about solo records from Blaze Bailey and Bruce Dickinson, so I thought we could look at some like side projects and solo albums, but I was keen to avoid things where the singer leaves the band and goes solo and the band just sort of fades away. So no Sting, no Paul Weller, Phil Collins doesn't really count. Debbie Harry released solo records, but Blondie were done, so she doesn't count. Same with Chris Cornell, because like Soundgarden were done, and then he went solo, didn't he? So we picked some tracks or albums or a few things that were true side projects, I reckon.
Okay.
So if you picked a few, I've picked a few.
Yeah, I've got a couple.
Yeah.
But it's really difficult to find a true solo album.
Yeah, innit? That's why I was...
You know, not a the band split up, so I need to do something album. So I find it really quite difficult to find stuff, but I've gone to what I know, which is mostly Bruce and...
I found a record a couple of years ago and really didn't like it, but now it sort of fits in with a lot of stuff I'm listening to. And it's Billy Corgan of the Smashing Pumpkins. And he's released this under William Patrick Corgan. And it's so different from Smashing Pumpkins. I think, because like Smashing Pumpkins is just Billy Corgan, isn't it? Really? It's with hired guns, like, but because this is so different. Anyway, it's called Cotillions. And it's like a concept album. And he went on a big, massive road trip and he wrote the album that should go with this road trip.
And
it's almost a Billy Corgan country record.
Okay.
And it's not, I don't know if it's good, but it's different. And I posted about it in the week and I was like, can a record be compelling and interesting without ever getting good?
I think it's possible.
Yeah, it's weird. I think
that's definitely... Yeah. There are certain albums where you listen to and you think, oh, do you know what, I can't stop listening to this because it's got something going on that I don't really know what it is, but I'm going to listen to it to the end and see what happens. Mm-hmm. Sometimes an album is a story, isn't it? You know, rather than, you know, I want to listen to it because... I really like their music.
Yeah.
Sometimes it is just a curio, isn't it?
But it's like I was saying about like Bruce Dickinson stretching his legs. Who would you wouldn't expect Billy Corgan to be making a country record?
No, exactly. So, and I don't think it hurts to release a flopper. If you're prepared to try something else.
Yeah, that's it.
You know, I don't know. I've never liked Billy Corgan's voice. I've never gone down that road, but it's intriguing to know that artists do just want to do something for the sake of what if I do this, what if I do that, or sometimes it's just this song came out of me, I'm going to release it, whether it's what you want to listen to or not, you know. So I think sometimes that's where it leads you.
Eddie Vedder often talks about how he if he's writing stuff, he's like got parts like. That's a Pearl Jam song I'm writing there.
Mm.
This is for something else, but I don't know what it is yet. But like, so he writes Pearl Jam songs and he writes other stuff.
Yeah.
So go on, give us one off your list then. What have you got?
I've got a definite solo album whilst still in the band. Tattooed Millionaire by Bruce Dickinson.
Excellent.
Yeah, still very much in the band and still very much recording. With the band. Unfortunately, he went away and did an album that was basically some PR guys sat in a room saying, hey, Bruce, can you record something that sounds a bit like Bon Jovi?
Yeah.
And Bruce went, well, it should be easy enough. Yeah, let's do it. And that's what he did. And it's very much of its time.
Talking of doing something very different to what you do in your day job, I've picked the album To Record Only Water for 10 Days by John Frusciante.
Oh, okay.
And it feels very much like he's just sat in his room with a four-track and an electric guitar and just knocking shit out. And it's really, it's very lo-fi, it's very chill, it's just like, and there's like three or four really good tracks on it, but as a project, I mean, he does weird stuff on his solo stuff anyway, but...
Yeah.
As a card-carrying non-fan of the Red Hot Chili Peppers these days, anything after One Hot Minute you can keep. This album came out in like 2002, I think. It's, you struggle to peg it. It's the same, the guy the Chili Peppers. Like, so, yeah, it's really cool. I had it on playing when we were knocking about, like, because I hadn't quite run away then.
Yeah.
So...
Run away.
Right, you know. And another one I've got similar is I picked River of Deceit from Mad Season's album Above. Mad Season with a super group that was Lane Staley and Mike McCready and Reagan Hagger on drums. And then they brought in like Duff McKagan came and played on a track, and Mark Lanigan came and sung on a track, and it was just like this big super group up in Seattle.
Okay.
River of Deceit, I'll take off the album for the playlist.
Okay, all right. So he was still, was it Alice in Chains?
Yeah, Alice in Chains was still active, and obviously Mike McCready was in Pearl Jam, and has always been active.
Got you.
So,
yeah, okay.
Everyone, I've got another Pearl Jam side project, which is Brad. So Stonegar's side went off and made records with Shane Smith from Pigeonhead and Satchel. James Dean Bradfield had his solo album out in about 2005, 2006, while the Manics were still very much a thing.
Okay.
He's had a couple of solo records, but that first one was really good. And then I've got a few which I found. You said it was quite hard to find some, and it was, but I found some that I thought might be up your street. Them Crooked Vultures, does that count?
Yeah. Yeah, that's a really good album, actually. Yeah, I forgot about that one.
That's Dave Grohl and Josh Homme and
yeah,
all of them.
Didn't they have a really unexpected guitarist? Was it someone like Jimmy Page or something?
Oh, could well have been. I don't know. We're generally a Josh Homme free zone on this podcast.
Why?
Sam can't stick him.
What?
Right, I'm not a big fan of Queens of the Stone Age, to be honest. Sam didn't like him, so...
And with that, I'm out. Thank you very much.
A few others. Mike Patton from Faith No More has got like all the side projects. He's always doing like Mr. Bungle, and
Bungle,
Phantomas, and Tomahawk, and God knows what else.
Bloody hell.
Maynard James Keenan from Tool, Pucifer.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And I suppose Perfect Circle, sort of side project. Maybe it's another band. Chino from Deftones has got Crosses, which is really good. Tim Armstrong from Rancid has got Transplants and does his own Tim Time Bomb stuff while Rancid is still going. And at the same time, Lars Fredriksson has got Lars and the Bastards and the Old Firm Casuals.
Yeah.
I found a record, which I'm going to talk about with Sam next week, which is Billy Joe Armstrong and Nora Jones.
And they're doing
a Everly Brothers album.
Hey?
Yeah. They've done a tribute to the Everly Brothers. And it's called For Everly.
Right.
But me and Sam are going to get into it next time a bit. So,
That's released now?
Oh, it came out in 2013.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah. Right, I
missed it.
That's going
to... Last Shadow Puppets, the boy from Arctic Monkeys.
Okay. Yeah. Blimey, there's a few then.
Yeah. And two from the 80s, as you've been into 80s stuff. The Power Station. Some Like It Hot. Some Like It Hot. And
really?
So they were that was the Taylor Brothers from Duran Duran.
Get on.
Yeah.
I didn't know that. Bloody hell.
And the last one, Electronic.
Electronic. That.
And they bring in, gone off on the top of my head now, but it's your boy from New Order, and I think Johnny Marr, and then occasionally Neil Tennant from the Pet Shop Boys. Getting away with it all my life.
Bloody hell.
Yeah, so there we go.
Because didn't the bass player from New Order have Monaco?
Yeah, that was it, yeah.
Yeah, he had a band.
So that was in the 90s, wasn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, that could count as one, but I suppose New Order had stopped for a bit, didn't they?
Well, you say that. I saw them at Redden in 98, so...
Oh, perhaps then.
I think
they were just on
a hiatus or something.
Yeah, so that goes as one. Does Psycho Motel by Adrian Smith
Was he in
count?
The band? Was he still the Maiden then or not?
He left and come back again. Yeah, he left and come back. So you could say it was a break.
All right.
He didn't leave as such. Well, he did leave, but he went away and did his thing and came back in 2000, 5 years later, having had a rest and... The rigors of touring had got the best of him.
I think that's quite a lot. I think like Brandon Flowers from Killers did a solo record well, and they're still going. So, but it's generally the singers, isn't it? I think like the only one that I could find really was like John Frusciante, and then Stone Gossard going off and doing their stuff. Oh, Jeff Ament has got a side band, Pearl Jam again, got a side band called Random, and it's just like this little power punk trio. And it's just like it's just really, really cool. I'll send it to you. So that counts as well.
I need birthday singers. Come on, people, we need birthday singers!
Birthday records, right. Not many big albums released this week over the years, I'm afraid. 1999 saw Blur release 13.
Okay.
Like this week in 1999. I think that's got Tender. It's a lead single on that. The number one single this week in 1999 was the Boyzone version of When the Going Gets Tough.
Shocking.
And then if we go back to the year we were born, 1979, we get Breakfast in America by Supertramp.
Oh, cracking. Love a bit of Supertramp.
But would you like to guess what the top three singles were this week in 1979?
This week?
Yes, in 1979. So just have a guess.
Top three. Okay, I know what the one was on my birthday.
Go on.
It was I Will Survive. So she would have been climbing up the charts about now.
She was still number one then.
Still so number one.
It was
one.
Only 2 weeks to your birthday, isn't it? Three weeks to your birthday. So
Yeah. So I didn't realise she was on top spot for that long.
Yeah.
I would have thought she was perhaps climbing up and would have hit around my birthday. So, yeah, so that's top spot then. 79. I don't know. Is there a... it's a Supertramp, as you just said. Is that in there?
No. So number one was I Will Survive by Gloria Gaynor.
Yeah.
Number two was Oliver's Army, Elvis Costello.
Ah, yeah, okay.
And number three was Tragedy by the Bee Gees.
Good Lord.
So there you go.
Wow, what a top three that is, eh?
The review you had on Shark Sandwich, which was merely a two-word review, just said, shit sandwich.
Where'd they print that? Where'd they print that?
That's not real, is it?
You can't print that.
Right, I've got a couple of bad reviews for an album that I know that you really like. One of your favourites. So let's see if you can guess which album I'm talking about from these reviews.
So go on,
Strider Sub-Zero, maybe a Mortal Kombat fan, says, for some reason, even the three-minute songs feel like they're about 10 minutes long. Also, the vocals are quite irritating at times. Cool and creative bass lines, though. Any guesses? Shall I go on to the second one? So the next one from DesFrog27, the 27th of the DesFrog clan, says, no, you don't need a 21-minute song of silence and moaning. No, you don't need to whine like that the whole time. One great song and a whole bunch of pretentious garbage.
21 minutes.
A 21-minute song of silence and moaning.
Silence and moaning. Blimey. That sounds like my late-night TV viewing. 21 minutes.
I don't know where they're getting that from, to be honest. But
I was going to say, that sounds...
Maybe there's a bonus track that just goes on and on and on. I don't know. You're much more familiar with the album than I am.
Is it Close to the Edge by Yes?
No.
No,
Focus on one great song and cool and creative bass lines. And it's an album we've spoken about on here a few times.
Is it?
Yeah.
One great song. Well, is it Maiden?
No.
I was going to say, because I was thinking the only thing I could think would be early Maiden, where Paul Jenner was perhaps a little bit gravelly.
I'll put you out of your misery.
Yeah, do it, man.
Space Hog, In the Meantime.
Honest?
Yeah, that's what two people reckon to In the Meantime by Space Hog.
So they're picking the first song as... In the meantime, being the opening track is the only good track.
Must be, yeah.
Jeez, man. There's some power punk on there. There's all aboard the Skylark. It's such a lot of fun, you'll see. I mean, it's
that's the premise of this bit, though, isn't it?
I can't sit here and say to people, you should listen to everything that I listen to because it's fucking amazing. And similarly, these people who have written these reviews, have listened to something and not liked it. And that's what music is.
That's it.
Unfortunately, you either like it or you don't. Or you could sit in the middle camp and go, yeah, it's all right. You could really like something, really hate something, or just think it's good.
And sometimes all you need is a good band.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I don't think Green Day have ever written anything that's just is like absolutely astronomically incredible.
Good riddance, time of your life.
It's just a good... Honest?
No, of course not.
Pop quiz, hot shot.
Right, you ready for a tiny quiz?
Go on. Oh, God, I hate quizzes. I'm crap at these.
Everyone says that. Number one single this week in 1999 was Boyzone, When the Going Gets Tough. But yeah. Who done the original and what film was it used in?
It was Billy Ocean.
Yeah.
Oh, bloody Nora. Film. Was it something like Breakdancer Musical or something?
No, it was a sequel.
A sequel?
But not like the name of the film 2. It was a sequel that had a completely different name to the first film.
Oh, shit, I've got no idea, mate.
Okay, it was Jewel in the Nile.
Oh, God. It
was
hell.
A sequel to Romancing the Stone.
Romancing the Stone.
Okay.
Bloody hell.
So, can you name the singer from Space Hog?
Langdon. Ah, what's his first name? For? Shit. It's not, but I'm going to say Stuart Langdon.
It's Royston William Royston. Langdon.
Royston Langdon, yeah.
Okay.
Ah, shit.
Right.
Because he's got his brothers in the band as well, isn't he?
Yes. Guitar player, yeah. Isn't he? Yeah. Blur's Damon Albarn is also with the Gorillaz, but what was the name of his monkey avatar?
Oh, I've got no idea.
Okay.
I didn't know any of them.
apparently, and I had to Google it, his name is 2D.
Oh, for God's sake.
The Bee Gees,
yeah.
The Tragedy, who did the cover version in 1998?
Steps,
yay!
God, he's got one.
And the last question in the quiz: how many UK number one albums have Iron Maiden had, and can you name them?
Holy shinoli! So they've done 17 studio albums. I would say a good portion of those are number ones. You've had maybe 3 or 4 releases in their sort of doldrum period. So I'm going to say 10.
Five.
Number one albums.
Five. Yes.
That
would you like to have a guess at which one to say?
Number of the Beast?
Yes.
Peace of Mind?
No.
It wasn't?
No.
Okay. Book of Souls?
Book of Souls, yes. That was their last one to reach number one.
I think Matter of Life and Death was number one?
Nope.
Oh, shit. Because the first two, Killers and Iron Maiden, didn't go to number one.
Nope.
Power Slave?
No, are you just going to go through them now? Shall I tell you?
I can literally go through them all and just get yes.
Yeah. Right. Number of the Beast.
Yeah.
Seventh Son of a Seventh Son.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
Fear of the Dark.
I was going to say Fear of the Dark, but I thought it was Doldrum period. So
yeah, so I wonder if that's off the back of Bring Your Daughter to the Slaughter, which got to number one off of the previous album, didn't it?
Possibly.
So and people like Bring Your Daughter to the Slaughter, so they bought the next album.
Yeah, possibly. And also like headline slots at Donington 92, which is like iconic for them.
Book of Souls you got, and the last one was The Final Frontier.
Oh, that went to number one.
Yeah.
Oh, that was their least well-received album of recent times. Yeah.
So that was the quiz. And you are right. You are crap at quizzes.
I'm crap at quizzes.
Okay, we're just about out of time, right? But before we go, we'd like to take a moment here for a Wayne's World salute to the guest jeans girl, Claudia Schiffer. Swing! Swing!
Right. Record of the week time. I asked you to pick a record. You could use anything you want, anything you like, new or old. Just pick a record and tell us why you love it.
Okay. Being the massive Iron Maiden fan that I am, there was obviously one clear choice for my album of the week, and that's Hackney Diamonds by the Rolling Stones.
That's the latest one, isn't it? That came out last year.
Oh, yeah. I'm a bit late to the party with it, but as I said... I was listening to some 80s stuff and the Rolling Stones got squeezed into a bit of that. And having done some deep dives on some of the 80s artists being Genesis and Go West, I thought, I've not done much into the way of them. So rather than going for a deep dive, I thought I'd go for their most recent release. And I'm just really glad I did. It is a collection of probably just under an hour's worth of just really good rock and roll. Some of the guitar work, you wouldn't say it was an 80-year-old guitarist banging them out. You would think it was somebody way more modern than some of it sounds really fresh, really catchy. The vocals are just, I mean, for it's not an ageist thing, it's just that guy shouldn't be singing like that. It's just full of energy, full of catchy hooks, great licks, some beautiful little blues guitar works. There's some great blues tracks in there that aren't sort of 12-bar blues, you know, the normal stereotype of 12-bar blues. It's bluesy in a rocky way, and I just think it's got some great tracks, really good tracks, really, really, really great tracks.
Didn't they do an album of like blues standards about 10 years ago or something? And that was very well received, but it was all like other people's songs, and that went down well. And I think they toured that, but and like Jagger was on the harmonica and all sorts, like, and apparently that went over really well.
But I don't know whether this was recorded with some of it was recorded with what's his name,
Charlie Watts,
the drummer.
I was going to ask. I don't know if they. I thought they might have just finished after he passed away, but obviously not.
Yeah, I think. It was a shame, really, that it wasn't. But also, it would have been nice for Charlie Watts to have been on the album. Mm. However, I think some of the drum work is incredible, really good. And you're listening to the way it kind of ticks along and you think, is this something that Charlie Watts would have played? Is this his style? And I think they've really benefited from somebody else sitting in the seat for a bit. I don't know if that's happened in their career before, but you know, they're not a band I normally listen to, but I think some of the drum work is really tasty on this. And there's not a bad song on there. Not a bad song, apart from maybe the one where Keith Richards sings.
Mm.
But it's still not a bad song. I just think it's a bit of a diversion from everything else on the album, and it's just a bit too much of a change for me, but not a bad song. I still listen to it and think it's interesting. I just, some of the bass on there is what you would say is pretty just like pedaling bass, but it's not about that. It's about the tonality of the bass. There's some beautiful crunchy bits where the bass really gets angry and but it's never complicated, but it's enough, and it's what's needed for the tracks.
It's just rock and roll, isn't it?
Oh, it's brilliant! It's so good. It's really good rock and roll. Have you listened to it enough to have any sort of like, oh, I love this one?
No, I listened to it in the park a couple of the times when I was at work, and it rattled along. And suddenly, like the tracks kind of rolled into each other a bit, and I put it on a second time, and I was surprised how quickly it got through. If that makes sense, because it's not like a 35-minute album, is it?
It's a good 40. Is it 45 minutes?
Something like that. Yeah, it's not a short album, but it's I did think it sounded a little bit like Supergrass.
Oh yeah, okay. I never thought of that. Yeah, it does.
Do you remember that? Was it the self-titled album, which had like Moving and Pumping on the Stereo and stuff like that? On that record, it sounded like Gaz was doing his best Mick Jagger impression, and this sounded like Mick Jagger was doing his best Gaz Coombs impression.
They have gone on record as saying they're, you know, influenced by the Rolling Stones.
Yeah. Oh yeah. 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 I mean, it's a bad thing. I love Supergrass.
That's a good. Yeah, I never thought of that, but I was just listening to it as a piece, and never really made any connections because I didn't have anything to refer to other than like "Gimme Shelter," which is the only real, and "Brown Sugar." What's the one that Shed 7 covered?
Jumper Jack Flash.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, was Jumpin' it? Jack Flash. Yeah.
Just guess.
So, yeah, there's a few that I know, but I wouldn't necessarily say I've listened to everything they've ever done, you know. So that's for next week. That's headphones on, and next week listen to the Rolling
Sticky
Stones.
Sticky Fingers, but, and
yeah,
Lead,
just get into it a bit more.
Main Street, and
just listen to what they've produced and give them a good go, because I've never have before. But off the back of this, if it's anything like this, their past output, then yeah, I'm really looking forward to next week. Give it a listen. I think it's brilliant. I think it really is. Is it going to be the type of album you listen to again and again and again for months on end? No, because I think I've done it, as I say, 12 to 14 times, and I think I've tapped as much as I can tap out of it. But I think it's just a really good, and exactly what I needed, because I was in a bit of a downer this week.
I had a thoroughly nice couple of hours listening to it in the park at work, and yeah, sometimes, a record, like we said earlier, a record can be just that.
Yeah.
Not everything has to change the world. Sometimes a good record can be a good record, and a good band is just a good band. Right, thanks for joining us again this week. I'll try and get a little less country and a little more rock and roll for you next time round.
Question for you though.
Go on.
Do you like country or western or both?
I like both kinds. I like country and western.
Good lad.
Blues Brothers reference. Oh, we got both kinds, country and western.
Good old boys.
I lost where I am. I'll try and be a little less country, a little bit more rock and roll. Although Leon might have a banjo rocking by then, so we could be having us a hoedown. Bomb.
Definitely.
Bomb. Okay. Come back next time when Sam should be making his 2024 debut. But until then, he was Leon, I was Rob, and that was Records and Bands.